Welcome back for another episode of Clean Tech Talk, where we at Clean Technica interview clean tech leaders from around the world. With topics ranging from electric cars to climate change communication, you can listen to our full podcast series by visiting our website at cleantechnica.com.
We're here for another episode of Clean Tech Talk. I'm Zach Shahan, CEO of Clean Technica. And joining us today is Karina Brockel, Chief Revenue Officer at Aurora Solar. Karina, just to start off, can you give us a little bit of an insight into how you got into the solar industry, how you got interested in solar, and then also how you found your way to Aurora Solar specifically?
Yes, it will be my pleasure. Good morning. Yeah, so I'm Karina Brockel, Chief Revenue Officer at Aurora Solar. And it's a very good question. How did I get into clean tech and into the solar world through my career? So I started my career actually very classically in technology. So I'm originally from Germany. So forgive my little grammatical or grammar mistakes here and there or my accent. So born in Heidelberg, started my career really at SAP, SAP AG, very big technology company in Germany. And then got into SaaS, which is software as a service within Salesforce, also another big now American a technology company, then spent time at Box, a cloud content platform, and then had the pleasure to join the solar world, the solar coaster through Aurora Solar. And how did I end up here? It was quite frankly a very just exciting moment, an inflection point in the industry. The industry just in general, energy transformation has been going on for years. So this is not the last 3 years have been exciting, but it's just joining really that journey of transformation. And what is, from my perspective, really interesting is approaching it from a technology perspective and the technology in the space, how can it support to create a better energy future for everybody. And that's how I ended up at Aurora Solar for the last 3 years.
Great. And can you tell us a little bit more about who Aurora Solar is, what you specialize in, what your focus is?
Yeah, sure, of course. So maybe first a quick intro to what the company does. So we as a company, so we're a technology platform. And what we do here is we really support solar professionals in how you market, how you sell, and then most importantly, how we're known is how we design solar installations. So through the technology, you can do all of the above. And we do it with a lot of technology, and AI is a big component in that. So we try to just make a lot of processes just better connected, streamlined, and so that solar professionals can show up really well for the homeowner. So that is one of our key goals as a company.
And where are you based?
I'm based in San Francisco in California. And what do? At Aurora? So I take care of most things related to revenue. So I have the sales organization under my umbrella, also marketing. I have also the Helioscope brand, which the solar world probably also knows, which focuses on CNI, so on the commercial side of the solar world. And then I also lead our international expansion. Me being a German, we're expanding into Germany first in Europe. That, of course, has a lot of benefits, me coming from Germany. So,
yeah. My wife is Polish, and I lived in Wrocław, Poland for 11 years, which is in German, Breslau.
The
first time I flew there, I was very confused. I guess the end of the Munich airport, last like terminal, and I'm looking for Wrocław, and I don't see it anywhere. I was like, what? I was freaking out. I was like, what? Wait, I just walked all the way through this airport. I'm supposed to be there. And then I'm looking at it, I'm like, Breslau, Wrocław. Maybe that's the same place, you know? Now they make sure to label it Wrocław. But back like 15 years ago or something, it was, they just kept it Breslau in German airports.
I see. Yes.
But yeah, now very, very comfortable with the German accent. But also, we just visited this summer again, and the rooftop solar industry in Poland is just blowing up. It's just so much rooftop solar going in like so rapidly. so much more than I see here in Florida in the Sunshine State, which is embarrassing, you know, but it must be really a hot market for you guys looking at Poland, Germany, all of these markets. Germany, of course, was one of the original leaders of the solar industry. So, and yeah, just speaking about that, I mean, every year for, you know, for the past several decades, the solar industry has been driven by policy. I mean, of course, there's a strong market components, obviously, but policy has driven this industry into fruition and into the scale that it is now, where it's the largest energy generation market in the world each year now. So as far as new capacity growth, not generation.
That's right.
So I'm just curious to get your take on how you're viewing, especially with that dual background of European policies and the US policies, and you know, San Francisco very different from Germany, but you know,
right.
seeing everything. Can you talk a little bit about how you've seen the Inflation Reduction Act affecting the industry in the past couple of years?
Yeah, of course. And you're right. So just as a general comment, policy is important. It's important to track it in the industry. So most of my conversations with solar companies, in Germany you call them Solateure, is really also a lot about ensuring that we as an industry really track policy well. So that's I just make it as a first comment, because it is not always as understood in different levels. You have federal, you have state, you have regional, same applies to Europe. And just even keeping an eye on policy in general can be a topic and a challenge for solar businesses, and really understanding what are in these acts. And so when you ask a bit more directly about the Inflation Reduction Act, what I would say my first observation or a first observation is, in general, it's been positive. So it raised just the awareness even of solar in the US with the media coverages that it had, homeowners paying attention and realizing that they could get support through the Reduction Act for their solar installations. So in general, it just raised the awareness of solar, I think, for US citizens and homeowners in general, so which is very positive. I would also say that we already saw the effects in all my discussions, at least already in 23. We also think that it will have a positive effect on 24. And I'll go a bit more into that, why I think it is so. So we do very regular studies, and we call reports. So we call it a solar industry snapshot here at Aurora. And what we do here, we have three different sources. So we poll about 1,000 citizens or American consumers, then about 1,000 solar professionals. And then we also analyze our own data. So Aurora's proprietary data, and has over 10 million solar projects that are getting designed within our platform. And those three data points usually give us a good indication, especially around policy or changes in the industry, about the effects of it. So, and when it comes to the Inflation Act,
about how normal citizens are seeing it, as well as how...
That's right.
Which can be the same or can be quite different, right?
That's right. And I think it's important to get it. You have three angles, and then look at the data underneath, and to get a picture of what's actually going on. Is it positive or is it negative? And I would say the first numbers that I think I'd like to just highlight is, so 45% of solar professionals, so in that bucket, they noticed an increase of demand as a result of the Inflation Act. And then another 40% just expect even demand just to rise in the future. So very positive. Homeowners, about 77% just increased in interest in going solar. And we saw really a 40% increase here in project counts year over year in designs.
Wow. And over. And within the first year or?
Yeah, in 2023, that's right. And then 70% of solar professionals actually really noted it in their business. So the business grew. So that's a really positive first impression that we got from the Inflation Act.
Policy.
And then, the data is great. Yeah. And then I'll also say so in addition, then I make sure also keeping just conversations and also seeing how the industry in general sees it. So we have an event, it's called Empower. It's an annual event. and where we try to bring the industry together. We try to really get solar business owners, really CEOs, to speak about how they view policy, and in this case, the IRA. And they definitely said that they expected it to be a positive, to be positive.
So one thing, but, early, okay, yeah. go ahead with the button and I'll ask more about it.
Yeah. That's right. I've been starting with the positive and what we've seen and the data being positive.
But that's more California of you than German of you, I feel like.
that's truly right. That's very true. I started with the positive. Yeah, but then what I also say is with any introduction of policy comes also a period of uncertainty. And what that means is that you have on for the Inflation Act, there were short-term effects on how community solar distributed generation projects could obtain tax credits. And then guidance on low-income tax credits and greenhouse gas reduction fund applications was also a topic that started to appear and become more crisp. But that for a certain period of time, you just have uncertainty in the market. And homeowners will just ask, so when is it actually going to affect? When could I benefit from it? And so it creates a bit of a pause in the market and for solar companies. And yeah, you have to educate during that phase of uncertainty quite a lot more than you usually would do.
Hello, cleantech enthusiasts. If you enjoy Cleantech Talk and Cleantechnica, please consider pitching in a few dollars a month at cleantechnica.com/support. That's cleantechnica.com/support, where you can sign up in seconds with a credit card, pitch in a few dollars a month, or whatever you like. Some people actually contribute $100 a month to help us cover climate change and clean tech and try to help the world one word at a time. Thank you.
Well, that lines up a lot with what I was going to actually ask next, which is, I mean, we've had this boom bust cycle for solar, well, in all markets. I mean, Germany had it big time with feed-in tariffs. Australia, which is leading, has had it. But the U.S. has had it, you know, definitely with the investment tax credit for the past decade plus. And one of the benefits I heard early on about the IRA was that it provided a real long-term stability and security that we've never really quite had to this scale. And that was the immediate effects were fine, good, but which even sound great from what you're telling us. But there was just more enthusiasm that this was just the long-term stability that the market has always craved and wanted. I mean, with the political situation today in the U.S., like nothing is certain. I mean, we have a very volatile, very unpredictable situation politically with what's going to happen the next few years. I mean, it used to be when something like this was in place, you would never roll it back. Like it's benefiting business, it's benefiting states across the country, it's benefiting people. Now there's a question like what, you know, anything could be rolled back if effectively, it seems like these days, if power changes. But what's your take on that, on sort of like the really long term, the 2027, yeah, 2030 kind of time frame, and how much this affects that and what that does for companies like Aurora and others?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and you're totally right, creating stability is actually really important. And why do I say that? I mean, we have the phrase of the solar coaster in the US, the up and downs. And so there is a real ask for stability, and meaning that policy stays stable for not only 1, 2, 3, or 4 years, but for a much longer period. That's where, and I'm comparing a bit now, in Germany, why did you have such a stable and steady rise of solar? Solar as an energy product, but also just homeowners pursuing solar installations. It's because there was a very stable environment. By the way, also changing in Germany. So interestingly enough, and you can see then those effects for the businesses, but it's critical, in my opinion, to just deliver for the industry and for the energy transition, to just give very stable and long-term policy, because that will create less solar coaster. So it's
how long-term is this helping? What is the kind of time frame?
Yeah, I mean, I would hope for at least periods of 10 to 15 years where you have a very stable programs that are not reversed in order for businesses to plan and to have and to be having the ability to do so. So yeah, but that is a...
So we can, that's a great, I mean, it's
might be wishful thinking in the US given just the cycles we can be in.
But the current policy, the current legislation with the IRA
gives you a sense of security through 2030, 2035. How far out? I mean, like I said, it's, you know,
I wouldn't give it that far out. I think, and this is my personal opinion now and my, so what I can see, but I think it will definitely be a lot longer than it usually has been. So I would hope for at least the 8-year mark is what I would be hoping for.
Sounds reasonable and pragmatic. I expect nothing less. This is good though. I mean, that's still, it's a big difference from year to year or every 2-year extensions, which were, I mean, on the one hand, it would spur a lot of installation and because people are like, oh, I have to do it now before it goes away. But it's just, it doesn't help for building businesses and building sustainable, efficient businesses and all, and bringing down costs, which the U.S. has struggled with compared to other markets that have much lower costs for permitting and installation and customer acquisition and everything. Well, I will jump from that kind of very good story and stable, you know, kind of look to net energy metering 3.0, because this has been, I think, this the solar topic that's even exceeded the IRA in the past year or two. What can you tell us about what has happened with NEM 3.0 and what it means and what's perhaps around the corner?
Yeah, so I can give a bit of perspective here, also a bit around data. But what I'd say, so definitely NEM 3 in California has definitely taken a bit, it definitely made the IRA and the positives here a lot more challenging and definitely something to be looked at as a negative. And when I say that, it's because, well, now with NEM 3, it just limits how much a homeowner can really earn from selling solar energy back to the grid. And so it has caused really a good amount of slowdown in the state. And then I'll just quote Bernadette Del Chiaro, so CalSTART's executive director. She represents the solar industry market here for us here in California. And so I agree with her on, so she quoted about 80% since NEM 3. So we had the market going down as after it went into effect, and we see similar drops in just project creations for California. So you had this really big peak. So people were rushing, really, Californians were rushing to just benefit of NEM 2 or the metering that was in effect before and to grandfather it in. And then as soon as you had April, the deadline rushing by, you really saw this drop. So, which is difficult for one of the biggest solar markets in the US. Yeah, so a lot of focus about NEM 3 and the effects of it. So, and what I'll say, there is another aspect also that makes it more challenging. It's definitely financing. And what I mean by that, just interest rates have increased. And so it creates hesitation for, again, a homeowner to make a decision for solar. So then we saw third-party loans have become more appealing, but then these limit how much a homeowner can really actually profit from going solar. So that combination between M3 and interest rates really make it challenging for the current solar owners, business owners, and solar companies to just keep up with the growth. We had very great growth for a long time, but keeping up with the growth rates that businesses have projected or forecasted for years. So
I think quite we a big
change here.
Sometimes the U.S. is so large, and we talk about the U.S. market, but the California market has always been such a huge portion of the U.S. market for everything clean tech. So you have to really look at what's happening in California to have any sense of what's happening in the U.S. And, you know, while other places may be growing more, I mean, California market has such a heavy weight on what happens. But yeah, I mean, I saw something the other day about how it's a very difficult time for people to buy a home and then have it be financially beneficial for them. Like it's a very long period before they could sell it now and make money on it if they bought it in the past year or so. And
yeah,
with cars too, we've been covering it seems like sort of very barely talked about financing crisis that's sort of happening in the car market. It's reminiscent of, you know, maybe 2008 with everything that happened back then with the economy. Just a lot of issues with financing and interest rates and people not making payments for long, like a sort of record record cases of people not making payments for their cars that they've sort of bought when the prices were high and now are struggling to pay off. So it's just, there's a lot of stuff in the air. And I think there's so much that's been happening with supply chains and the COVID pandemic and wars, invasions, all of that kind of stuff, that I think is very hard for anyone to really have a feeling of where we're going to be in 6 months or a year with any of these markets, right? Do you have a similar feeling, or do you feel a little less concerned about the state of things?
I'm very pragmatic. I'm a pragmatist. And so for me, the one thing, and you're totally right, macro is something to be watched. That's why I started our conversation with, I think that's where macro trends is something for every solar business. It's very important. But I'd say one thing, and maybe changing a bit perspective, but I think the importance is here just to create, in my opinion, a really good homeowner experience. And what I mean by that is taking the homeowner along and really, as a solar business, focusing on educating the homeowner in a better way. So that has been non-trivial, again, because there is changes, markets adapt. In general, there is awareness about some policy and then the policy change. So there is a lot of weight on the shoulders of a solar company to really educate the homeowner. So I think it's important that we as an industry actually educate very well and find better, faster, and also more trust-building ways to really make that connection to the homeowner and the homeowner experience. And what I'll mention, so again, in our industry snapshot, what we found is that 50% of homeowners find it challenging to determine if an installer is legitimate and which is holding them back from going solar. And there's a lot to do in how, from marketing to sales to then actually to the actual installation, how to create very positive experiences with the homeowner. And then really explaining all these incentives really well and transparently. And so what I'd say is maybe a few other data points. So 87% of consumers believe a solar company's reputation is more important when they decide to go for solar, whether or not to work with them. So that is a very interesting piece. And then nearly 43% actually have struggled to differentiate between solar companies. So I think there is a lot that we as an industry can do to just make sure that, again, we educate the homeowner well, we break the complexities down, and then really create, when changes like NEM3 are happening, we catch a bit these up and downs in the market. And so I think the other really big thing that came out of NEM3 is how to educate on the ROI of solar plus storage. So the storage, the battery components, how can you then get a better ROI again out of your system is a very important other point that I think the industry was a bit late to. You could see, wasn't a lot, but it that one quarter and then just making that transition was definitely a challenge. And I had a lot of discussions with some companies about that transition.
I was going to ask about that next specifically as well, because going off grid was a popular theme some decades ago. As the solar industry grew and, you know, more and more, it was like a mainstream offering. You know, the argument was like, just use the grid as the battery. Like, this is the best battery you have is the grid, you know? So just, you know, don't try to do too much and then overspend when you have that backup right there. And clearly the NEM 3.0 regulations are going to push more people to have their own, you know, fully separate solar plus battery system. This is also getting more competitive, although I guess the learning curve, the trends have not been as strong in recent years as they were for several years, with battery costs coming down and solar costs coming down. There's, you know, all the supply chain issues and all that. But how do you view that market right now in California? How do you view, like, where it's at and how people are talking about it for customer end and industry end on where it might be again in a year if certain trends keep going?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely see, so attach rates for batteries is what we see in any of the annual reports as well from the big solar companies. You can see already how that trend is going to continue. So, but I think that what is it driving? It's A, getting more ROI.
What are the attach rates right now? Do you know? Or
it depends, of course, on the company. It depends on the solar company. But I mean, I don't have a concrete number. I can look that up for us. No problem.
Yeah, we can get that and put that in an article later. But
totally.
I feel like I should know as well. We can follow up.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's a
big amount. California per se, the solar companies are trying to, of course, balance out that ROI discussion. It's about how do you make most out of it? So we'll get the number for what we see in California on the attach rates in general. But then what I'd also say is it's about balancing out how energy prices are going to continue over the next years, decades. And I think that's another part where with battery, NEM3, IRA. So we're homeowners. One has to lean in a bit and educate the homeowner about how 62% of homeowners expect the energy prices to continue to rise. And that's one of the reasons why Americans today, they look for solar or are interested in solar. So I think that trend will continue to happen. And so I think we'll just have to, over the next years, make that combination really, really well about the education, make the battery attach, and then also track alongside what are the energy prices actually doing so that the homeowner gets actually what they need and what they wish for in energy. What I'll say also, I think that in general, just being better in selling is definitely an agreement that I've heard now from so many discussions over the last 6 months, and meaning being the ability to switch to have a just more accurate, speedy conversation is really critical and important. What I mean by that is accuracy. A homeowner today expects a solar company, when they pitch, when they present solar, to have it already pretty dialed in, meaning the solar system that they're presenting and even the first draft needs to be really accurate. And any changes that come afterwards or anything that gets missed during that conversation corrodes a bit the trust. So meaning that, oh, now we have a few more panels less or more or in order. And so that is an important point that I think for California, but all the other markets in general, is just an area where if we change that very well, we support it with, I mean, I'm having a technology viewpoint. I think technology can help here a bunch. You're fast and accurate at the same time. And then you create really, really meaningful experience with the homeowner. So then it just creates a better experience altogether. And I believe then we can balance a bit out effects that we have in here. So yeah, so focusing a bit on the sales and then those soft costs. You mentioned it earlier. The US has unusually high costs in here in the solar world. I think there is a real opportunity for the homeowner, but also for the solar companies to just become way more efficient. I think that's where we'll get as an industry just a lot more benefits.
Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory has long produced these great extensive reports that highlight what are the costs all the different costs that go into a solar system, soft costs, hard costs, and comparing that to other countries. And for some reason, soft costs are much higher in the US. And the two biggest factors have been solar permitting costs and solar acquisition costs, customer acquisition costs, sorry. And it's always been a little bit, like, I understand the permitting problem is pretty straightforward. It takes too long, it's too costly and all that. But the acquisition, it's always been a little bit like baffling. Like, how is it so much more? How does it cost so much more to get customers in the US than in Germany or Australia or some other markets? Like, I know you've just talked about that, but can you talk about it any more, like, give more insight into what it is that's taking it so much more time and money on our side of the...
I actually can, because I have insight into the different, I call it the funnel. So it's actually pretty relatively simple. It's just how demand gets generated in each market. And what we see in the US is just the marketing and acquisition funnel of simply leads and being in touch again with the homeowner. That's why I'm focusing a lot on that. It's just, it's a world where it still leans a lot on the sales organizations of the solar professionals. So we have door knocking, we have very concretely reaching out to homeowners, and that's a different funnel. And what I mean by that is you'll see in different countries, again, also differs by country, difference just in buying consumer behavior, but a lot more is done digitally. So meaning through marketing funnels, education actually of the homeowner through the upper parts of the funnel, through marketing, and then actually very a lot slimmer funnels, because you just don't need as many, you don't just need as many boots on the ground to educate the homeowner. So it's actually a more investing more in the earlier parts of the funnel. So increasing the awareness of solar in general is where the funnels are different, because then you have a broader base, you just have way more efficiencies. So the marketing, sales, execution, operation funnels just become all a bit leaner. And that's where a lot of the cost sits. Lead acquisition, lead maturing, lead qualification, and then education of the homeowner early there.
Oh, yeah. That's, and living in Europe for over a decade, this has always been sort of what comes to mind. It's like stuff seems to get around by word of mouth really, really effectively, really quickly over there. Whereas here, of course, word of mouth is still a big factor, but it seems like people are just more disconnected and more, it's more like the communities are not so strong and big. And it's like, if something becomes like a good buying opportunity in Europe, it's like, boom, all of a sudden everybody knows it. and you see this case with, like, for example, Poland, where it had like no rooftop solar when I was living there. And then we've gone back a couple of times in the past 4 years, and it's like just an extreme boom. And it's like everybody knows about it. All these people are like, it's not just a niche segment. It's not technologists. It's not environmentalists. It's like everyone you talk to knows about it. And it's just, we don't seem to have that same word of mouth system. I mean, we have word of mouth, but it doesn't seem to be the same. So I agree with your point. And then I see constantly ads on YouTube and online about get a solar estimate, you know, all this. They're sort of educational, but they're sort of look spammy. And I mean, they look quite spammy sometimes. And you get concerned, like, they don't necessarily seem trustworthy if you don't know the name. And it's a very decentralized industry, which is great because a lot of small businesses are benefiting. But then you don't know, who do I go to? Like, who can I trust? Who can't I trust? There's a case in Florida right now. I just saw on Google News where the attorney general is suing a company, I think in East Florida, that was basically pressuring people into going solar and then not finishing the projects. And it's like, you know, you don't want to be the one of the people who fell for the wrong company. And then Tesla is a really interesting case because it's its own beast, but it's, I don't know what all went into its solar arm in the past few years, but when Tesla acquired SolarCity, the idea was, we're going to make this process more efficient. We're not going to do the door knocking. We're going to sell through our brand name, through our stores that are already in place. We're going to have all these efficiencies, and we're going to do great. In actuality, the past few years, Tesla's solar division has dropped a lot. And it's shrunk from being the clear leader to not being near the leadership position. So I'm not sure if that didn't work for Tesla, or if they just weren't prioritizing solar for other reasons or not. But again, how do we get past this barrier of having to spend so much time and so much effort, and just having a more general understanding? Hey, just go solar. Just do it. Nike, just do it. We need the Nike slogans.
Yeah, and I think it's an industry topic, because I think you have to have multiple players coming together to just raise the general awareness. And so there is very practical ways you can do so. You can do it with through digital. And so there is definitely routes and routes that we get tapped on the shoulder all the time and get asked by by the solar companies, how could Aurora help here and do more? And we're definitely thinking through that, and how can we just help in general to make more of digitized, because then it's an easier way. It's much faster. You can do it through search. So there's a whole area here that is very interesting for sure. And I think as an industry, as we come together, that we could tap into. But it will be a topic, I think, for everybody in the industry for a long time.
Just be sure to send me updates when you have, you know, great things working, great practices. You're like, hey, look, this is working really well. Look at this improvement. So keep us posted. And as one more final topic, I think from me at least. So, you know, early on, climate change concern, starting before Al Gore's Inconvenient Truths, but especially that made a big impact on a lot of people and sort of helped to kick off more solar interests. And many early buying of solar and electric vehicles was, you know, people who were concerned about the climate. We're more mainstream now. We're much more mainstream now. So I imagine it seems like the conversation has shifted away from that a lot because we're trying to find people who are buying it to save money or, you know, for financial reasons, who overlooked it for climate reasons. But at the same time, we have such extreme weather issues, natural disasters related to climate, fires in California, extreme hurricanes in Florida. How is that conversation going these days? How much is that a part of why people go solar these days? How much of that is a part of the conversation that you think solar companies should be having with people or not having?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely for sure something that typically gets woven into the argument for solar. So I think it's very present. However, what I'd say is it's important I think we're that step further. As you rightly were saying, you had the early adopters who were very motivated by climate and by making an impact through solar in that way. But we definitely are in the next phase of really democratizing it. You had also what you saw earlier is just in order to finance solar a few years back, just a very different world. And so you had to bring a lot more capital within that, or bring a lot more capital yourself to get your solar installation. And I think it's really important that we're in that next transition, in that next phase. So where we're getting actually now to the masses or to a really much broader base. And there, of course, the argument or the reasoning for solar is typically now a mix. So it depends really, really great, who are already very refined. They actually, solar companies are able to tweak it based on what they see the interest is of the homeowner. Is it more about climate? Is it really more about reducing the monthly electricity bill or other reasons? And so that, yeah, they tweak it really down to that. But in these days, what I'm seeing, and just even from how companies position, it's a mix. It's definitely a mix because it's just a lot more broader. And so the reasons for going solar are a lot more broader now too. And the effect on climate is definitely something that people care about.
Yeah. And someone else on your team who's listening in just sent a chat that that your snapshot found 35% of all homeowners are worried about the impact of climate change on their property.
That's right.
So it's still a big portion, but I mean, the month-to-month costs are gonna be the driving force for most buyers, I imagine. Are there any, I'm not sure, we had a lot of really fun discussions, which I would say even more than normal. So I got a little bit, you know, beyond the agenda I had here. So I'm not sure if I missed anything. I don't think so. But is there anything that you wanted to touch on or wanted to talk about that we have not, or you want to emphasize again?
I think we're good. I think we touched on a lot of very, very good points. The pros and the cons.
Thank you for your insight. This has been a really, I appreciate that you, some people just want to talk about the good stuff. And I appreciate that you're giving us all the angles and just giving us a really thorough update of the solar industry and right now. So it's appreciated, and enjoy sunny California and and the booming clean tech industry out there.
I will. Thank you so much. Right. What a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Clean Tech Talk. Join us next time to get your electric fix. If you would like to sponsor our podcast, send us an email at accounts@cleantechnica.com. That's ACC OUNTS at cleantechnica.com. Thanks. Yeah.